et sur location.
De quoi le sortir?
Location. Location.
Welcome to Echolocation, the show that eavesdrops on Mother Nature. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lo Judas, broadcasting on WGXC in New York's Hudson Valley. And after many months of near silence around here, the soundscape is just starting to come alive. As you can hear, we're not going to stick around here in the Hudson Valley for this broadcast. Instead, we're going to listen to sounds from beneath the ice in the Earth's polar regions. And we're going to learn about an initiative called Polar Sounds, which is a unique project reimagining some of the little heard sounds of the Arctic and Antarctic regions, reflecting on climate change and the evolving sounds of the polar seascapes. This show features an interview with the leaders of Polar Sounds. We'll hear from Stuart Falks from Cities in Memory, which is one of the world's largest sound projects, and it encompasses field recording, sound art, and sound mapping. And Stuart is based in Oxford, UK. And Geraint Rees-Whittaker from the Helmholtz Institute for Functional Marine Biodiversity and the Alfred Wegener Institute for Polar and Marine Research at the University of Oldenburg in Germany. And they're going to talk about polar sounds, and we will intersperse the interview with some of the 100 songs and sound pieces that were made with underwater recordings collected by researchers in the Arctic and Antarctic. And before we dive in, just a note that credits for all of the pieces we feature on this show will occur at the end of the broadcast, and you can also find them in the show notes on our Facebook page, echolocation/WGXC.
Stuart Fowkes. I'm the founder of Cities in Memory, which is one of the world's largest sound projects, with the overall aim of remixing the world one sound at a time. And on the Polar Sounds project, we were the kind of the artistic partner of the project. So we effectively used our networks to source the artists for the project, develop the composition elements and the composition side of the project, and then present it on the Cities in Memory website at the end.
Yeah, I'm Geert Rhys Whittaker. I'm an artist researcher working at both the Helmholtz Institute for Functional Marine Biodiversity and the Alfred Wegener Institute for Polar Marine Research. And essentially what I'm doing over the next few years is creating a bunch of art projects so we can better understand art science collaborations and the ocean. Like I was saying, I work for two institutes, and my role is essentially to create a bunch of art exhibitions and projects in relation to science, the ocean, and sound. And over the next few years at the two institutions. And so this project began when myself and Dr. Ilse van Opzeeland, who is one of the acoustic scientists at the Alfred Wegener Institute Polar Marine Research, one of the projects we were trying to understand is what happens if we can get numerous artists other than just myself to, if we gave these sounds out basically, and to see how people could, what would happen if numerous artists were able to interpret these sounds. And so having contributed in the past to Stuart's website, Cities in Memory, we got in contact with Stuart to see if he'd be interested in collaborating with us. So we could send some of these sounds and see what would happen then if artists, what happens if artists use these sounds and essentially reimagine. Our interest is really in how artists reimagine the sounds of the polar seas to understand what people know about the oceans and the polar seas beforehand. That's one element of the project we're doing essentially.
And then from my side, so Cities in Memory is this project that's existed for a number of years now with the overall aim of, as I mentioned earlier, remixing the world one sound at a time. So what that means is we work with field recordings, kind of considering them to be source material for composition, source material for inspiration for artists. And we ask people to take field recordings from all over the world, all types of field recordings, and create a composition built around those field recordings. And in this way, we create a global sound map, which allows you to navigate the world through the sounds of the world as they are, or an imagined alternative sound world that's effectively the collective imagination of thousands of artists who've come together to produce this kind of global collaborative effort, as it were. And as part of that, two or three times a year, we do deeper dive projects, which, excuse the pun when it relates to polar sounds, but we do deeper dive projects into certain specific areas of sound. So, for example, we've done dives into the sounds of prayer and the sounds of protest, the sounds of nature, all these kind of different areas of sound. And so when Grant came to me and suggested that these sounds were available from the Arctic and the Antarctic, you know, the two things fitted together very naturally. I think the aims of the institutes from a scientific point of view and the aims of Cities in Memory and what we're trying to do really fitted together, you know, like a hand into a glove when it came to this project. So it was very, very natural for us to work together on this. It didn't really require us to manipulate or kind of think differently about either of our approaches or the things that we were doing, because they were just a very natural kind of connection between the two projects. So from that point, we took the source material very, very willingly, and we put out a global call to artists around the world who wanted to take part. Got a long list, whittled that down to a short list based on various criteria, like the responses to the brief, making sure that we had like a diversity of, as far as possible, diversity of locations, diversity of different artistic approaches, diversity of gender and ethnicity where possible. So we had a good broad range of artists to take part in it, and got down to that final list of just over 100 artists who took part in the final project.
So I'm interested, how are the recordings being used from the scientific side of things?
Primarily to understand the various ways that mammals communicate. What are they doing? Where they're doing? and to understand both the impact that humans are having on the sounds, and to try and understand migration patterns, communication patterns, and to understand what these sounds actually mean, basically. So I work with the lab, the acoustic lab, at the Alfred Wegener Institute, and each researcher, they work on, come together to do certain projects, but they'll also do their own projects, whether it's research in fin whales, blue whales, humpback whales. So it's quite a varied understanding of the acoustic world. And so with this project, then it's offering something that's slightly different in the sense that it's taking what would usually be used as more traditional academic data to create academic papers on the impact of sound in the underwater world. And then this is kind of reinterpreting that data, which in some instances has been there for quite a long time because it takes a few years to actually collect the sources to begin with.
And so are the anthropogenic noises that are used in polar sounds, are those sort of, is there someone particularly studying the impacts of anthropogenic noises, or is it they're just sort of recorded while you're trying to, or arrive, while the researchers are trying to capture, say, Ross seals or Weddell seals sounds?
At this institution, at the Alfred Wegener Institute for Polar and Marine Research, it's mainly those sounds aren't necessarily the ones that the scientists are actually looking for. There is plenty of research, though, specifically with shipping noise and seismic air guns, that there's plenty of academics I can put you towards that direction who are researching this and have been doing for decades now, in particularly the way that they're masking their communication as well as physical harm, because there's plenty of evidence now to suggest that, especially due to shipping noise, that certain species are changing the way the amplitude that they're actually communicating at to kind of bypass this noise created by ships, for example. So that research is definitely getting done. However, for this instance, it was less, it's more byproduct of putting hydrophones in the ocean, both the Arctic and Antarctic, and then discovering then these sounds afterwards. But yeah, although papers are in the pipeline and stuff like that. Well, and also a lot of these research teams, they're not only part of the scientists who work here at the Alfred Wegener Institute, but also then they're always part of numerous different projects throughout the world. So yeah, there's that connection as well.
So I was really interested. I think it's really fascinating that part of the goals that you have are to track the understanding of the musicians and artists themselves that make pieces with the sounds. And are there similar goals in your outreach to the broader world public to raise awareness and understanding of the underwater soundscape?
Well, I think pairing and collaborating with Cities and Memories is a great start because, you know, Stuart's got an amazing platform which has been able to reach so many people, you know, around the world. And so I think that is a great start to kind of say, okay, so everyone who interacts with the website, that's one way of looking into it. The project then has numerous different phases. One is to, you know, as we've already started now, to interview the artists to understand their perspective and their understandings and what they created and why they created what they created. There's another phase then to interview the scientists as well to understand what they interpret of these creative interpretations we've done. And there's also a plan to have a public exhibition as well here in Germany to take that further and see how the audience responds to this and how we can potentially measure their responses to it as well. So it's an ongoing project. But indeed, you know, measuring people's attitudes and behaviors is somewhat difficult. You know, what questions do you ask? Who are you asking? How are you asking them? So these are the ongoing things that we're trying to develop really as we go forward to try and understand how, you know, how people respond to this. But it's very difficult, I think, to set out, you know, someone might listen to it. You know, as you said, someone might listen to your show. Myself and Stuart have done lots of interviews on radio and television, you know, which has reached loads of people. But then what next? What happens then? What do they do with that information? What they actually listen to the pieces and hopefully get inspired? And do they have the power to do so? So these are very interesting questions, but quite difficult to measure, I think, but will be part of the project moving forward.
And I wanted to segue a little bit because both of you are artists that have work in the Polar Sounds Project. So I just wanted to ask you a few questions about your own experience creating pieces with the recordings. So starting again with you, Stuart, could you describe your approach, what piece you used and how you worked with it?
Yeah, sure. So I worked with the sound of the Ross Seal for the piece that I did in the project. And I mean, I'm in a fortunate position as the founder of the project because I get to sit through all the recordings at the beginning, listen to every single one of them and have first pick of all the one that I would like to work with the most, as opposed to waiting until the end of the list. So I got to kind of go through the whole thing. Actually, that's the one to me. And when I'm working with field recordings musically, then I'm always looking for what's the odd thing that jumps out at you, that arrests you, that grabs you, and that immediately kind of paints a mental picture in my head. So like to come back to this idea that Roland Barthes has in the book Camera Lucida, which is about photography. He talks about photography in two ways. He says that there are two qualities to a photograph that you should be looking for. And one of them is called the studium, which is the formal quality of the photograph that you know, should impress you. So whether that's the lighting, the framing, whatever it might be, the composition, that's the studium. And then there's the punctum, which is the individual response that you have, which is the one thing in that photograph that stands out to you. So whether it's the way that a certain person is looking, or the way a certain item of clothing is falling, or something like that, it's the thing that jumps out of the photograph to you as an individual. And to me, when I'm listening through to the sounds of the project and deciding which one to work with, or if I'm listening to an individual field recording and deciding how to work with that, I'm always looking for that kind of idea of the punctum, what is the thing that jumps out at me. And listening through the whole collection of recordings, I, you know, when I saw them written down, I had this original idea that, oh, I'm going to work with the cracked ice sound, and I'm going to do all these fantastic things with the cracked ice sounds. Oh, the seismic air gun sounds incredible. I'm definitely going to work with the seismic air gun. But listening through the list, the sound of the Ross Seal was so particular. And really, it had this kind of, it's hard to describe, it sort of conjured up this mental image to me of layering. I could imagine it sitting at a certain depth within the water, and I could imagine musical elements above it and below it representing the Arctic waters, representing the depths below and the ice above. And there was something about the quality of the sound which just gave me this picture of depth and this idea of creating a composition that to me felt three-dimensional. So when I was building the piece out from there, it was a case of building out kind of bass pulses to sit underneath that, representing the depths of the sea, higher end pieces, kind of at the same level the seals might have been swimming at, and just building out in my own head this sort of map of the depths of the ocean and where the seal was swimming, what instruments I would put above and below that to create this sense of depth. Then from there, I brought in some sounds of a cracking iceberg from elsewhere in the world that I had in the Cities of Memory project already. These elements of ice cracking came into the composition, as well as this kind of nod towards the, I guess, the destruction of the environment, the human made impact of the environment that these animals are living in. So as glaciers become, you know, seals in particular will rely on glaciers for raising their pups, for example, and for breeding and for all that kind of stuff. And as those recede, as those diminish, then obviously that you've got some serious problems, some serious challenges. So that's what I was looking for with the sections in the composition that have got the kind of cracking ice elements in those wells, just to lift that to the surface.
So I decided to use the sound of the air guns because they just sounded quite interesting. I mean, all the sounds are amazing, and it was an amazing process to be able to just listen to all these various sounds, although it was a very lengthy process to actually pick the 50 sounds to begin with. That took weeks and weeks because it's quite a basically you're looking at this big visual data, and you've just got to like try and find sounds within that, which takes quite a long time. But the actual air guns, I don't know, to me it just sounded like bombs going off and like a war on the oceans. And so that to me was quite a powerful kind of way that we can interpret what's really going on under the oceans. And so I played with that idea of trying to question if we could ask the whales what are they going through when their communication is masked, or perhaps when they're actually physically harmed by these seismic air guns, then what would they say? And so I went down that route of, because I'm from Swansea, a place in South Wales, which got bombed quite heavily during the Second World War, I decided to search the archives there, and I found interviews from the 1970s, which were people reflecting on the devastation that the bombing had on Swansea, which is also a city by the sea. And yeah, so when I was listening to these interviews, I thought they matched up very well, in my head at least, because obviously the reality is we'll never know what a whale actually is going through. But for my piece, that is what I did. I wanted to kind of reflect, okay, if they could speak to us, perhaps this could be potentially something that they would tell us. And so, yeah, I was lucky that the fact that when I actually went through the archive data, a lot of the extracts sounded as if they were perfect for the piece, where people talk about the wailing noise of the sirens during the Second World War and some other bits like that which are a bit kitsch, but and the fact that they had Welsh accents as well, that's not lost on me, and the fact that the whales have Welsh accents. But yeah, so it's just that kind of nod to that kind of political context of what that sound meant to me.
Hello to you, wherever you are in the world. What you are about to hear is something that has never been heard before. Using cutting-edge translation technology, scientists have conducted the world's first interview with a humpback whale community from the Arctic. In this extract from the conversation, the whales discuss the impact that industrial-scale seismic airgun oil and gas surveys has had on them and their homes. Airguns produce a pulse of sound that can spread from tens to hundreds of kilometers under the ocean. We never knew the extent of the damage until now. The next voices you will hear will be those of the whales.
The main bombing was continuously in the same area. You had to be so careful. The highway had been hit there badly with a bomb, which I found I had to divert again. So frightening.
And when they were passing, and I heard it come down, and their home got a direct hit.
When the siren went, when the warning went, it was an up and down wailing noise. You would hear one siren start, and then within seconds, others would pick up the chorus until you'd have, oh, I suppose, at least 8 or 10, perhaps 6 or 8 anyway, different wailing sirens going off in the whole area.
A few bombs fell.
And about 3 or 4 explosions. But on this particular occasion, the water was absolutely blood red.
So on the first night, they had such a battering, really, that they came out. What sort of time did they come out then? Is it in the afternoon?
Oh no! About 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, because I suppose they were so frightened that the bombing would start somewhere around that time in the evening part, that they were coming out as soon as they could, really.
They all changed back in the morning, didn't they?
Well, they had to go back, I suppose, after the bombing had finished and the air raid was over, that they went back to see what damage their houses had been done, you see?
So you got home that night, that morning safely.
The start of the really severe bomb damage. The main school completely demolished.
Quite a lot of damage and quite a number of casualties in that particular area.
But this was the sort of thing that impinged itself very much on a child's consciousness.
Having talked to a lot of the interviews, a lot of the artists already, it's amazing to see the diversity of compositions of people and the inspirations that triggered the pieces are very diverse and very different, and everyone's reactions as well to this, to the same sound in some instances has been completely different. So yeah.
The piece I always go to is called Majestic Mammalia by an artist called Mr. Sakatumi, which is a reinterpretation of the sound of the humpback whale. And for me, that is, it's just an extraordinary composition. It's extraordinarily musical and moving, and the use of the humpback whale sample as a musical instrument is just, it's first class. Like, you can't imagine the song without that sample in there. Moves the whole thing along as a piece, it progresses it, and it just works perfectly as an instrument. And this idea that there's the whales are actually part of this musical symphony that's been constructed. So I think that would be one of my personal highlights from the project.
One by Hossam Hilal from, he's from Egypt in Cairo. And I've already spoken to him, and he uses this North African drum from where he's from in the piece. And I think that was really interesting, the fact that he's used that instrument. So that's definitely worth checking out.
You talked a little bit about this, but do you want to add anything more about next steps for the project and how this collaboration will continue?
Yeah, like I said, so as far as what we're doing with the research now is to interview all the artists, or as many as the artists, and to understand their perspective, interview the scientists, so play the compositions to the scientists as well to see what they actually think of these compositions. And see how it might make them think differently, or if it does make them think differently about the sounds that they work with every day. And then the idea then is also to have a public exhibition as well, so we can measure the impact and what do people take away from it as well. So all those are in the pipeline.
Well, I mean, we're with this project, as Geraint says, we're going to be looking at working together potentially on, you know, the exhibition, or maybe that involves some element of live performance or something like that. When the paper or the kind of the collected research is together on the art science collaboration, I think we might look at ways in which we can present that or a version of it on Cities and Memory, as well as a kind of follow-up piece, looking at, okay, we've done the project, we've spoken to all of the artists, we've spoken to all of the scientists, what are our collective reflections on that? It would be really nice to present that back to the kind of the Cities and Memory community more broadly. But, you know, from the point of view of the project, just Cities and Memory purely, then at this point we're also looking at, okay, what are the next projects we're going to do for, you know, for the rest of 2023, and how can we build on some of the momentum that, you know, the Polar Sounds has also brought in our direction.
Are there particular websites that you want to share?
Well, everything's on citiesofmemory.com. So the entire project lives there. That's the home of the project. So citiesofmemory.com/polar-sounds is the full URL. And on there, you'll find maps of the Arctic sounds and the Antarctic sounds. You'll find a player with all of the sounds in there, all of the descriptions that the artists have given, the original field recordings as well, all that kind of stuff. So it's all there.
You've been tuned in to Echolocation on WGXC and wavefarm.org. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, thanking you for listening. And a big thanks to Stuart Falks from Cities in Memory and Garrett Reese Whitaker from the Helmholtz Institute for Functional Marine Biodiversity and the Alfred Wegener Institute for Polar and Marine Research for talking with me about the Polar Sounds Project. On today's show, we heard selections from the Polar Sounds album, which is available at Cities in Memory on Bandcamp. So if you liked what you heard on today's show, head on over to Bandcamp and support the project by buying the album. And we heard The Codes by Anna Vienna Ho, which featured Toothed Whales, Ancient Traveler by Huayang Shun, featuring Colliding Icebergs, Sound for the King by Stuart Falks featuring Ross Seal, First Contact by Geraint Rees featuring seismic airgun shooting, and Majestic Mammalia by Mr. Sakatumi, which featured Humpback Whale, and Hoot by Hassam Halal, which featured Minke Whale. And I have to say that I was very honored to also have a piece included in Polar Sounds. And so I'm going to take us out playing a part of that piece, which is called As Above, So Below, and it also features Ross Seals. Until next time, keep your ear to the ground.